Here we go.
Good morning. Welcome to this meeting of the Orange County Housing and Community Development Commission for Thursday, September 26, 2024. Please stand and join me in honoring the flag of our great nation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We'll now proceed to the agenda for this morning's meeting. The agenda contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as otherwise provided by law, no additional action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. Public comment rights are not unlimited and do not include the right to defame or slander. The use of profanity that causes a disturbance or disruption in the proceeding and is truly objectionable is not allowed, and it may cause us to have to take a recess from the meeting. Public comments must be within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission. As such, attacks on persons who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the commission will not be heard. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Yes, good morning, Ms. Ann Nguyen. Second call for Ms. Ann Nguyen. Ms. Tracy Law. Second call for Ms. Tracy Law. Mr. Mike Alvarez.
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Carrie Buck is excused as of today. Stephanie Otto.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. James Mai. Second call for Mr. James Mai. Mr. Wayne Carvalho.
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Carla Wilkerson.
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Helen Smith-Gardner.
Here.
Mr. Mike Frost.
Here.
Ms. Cecilia Hupp.
Here.
And Mr. James Mai.
Good morning. Here.
Madam Chair, we have quorum, and I'd like to announce some housekeeping items before we begin. Please note that if a quorum is lost due to members leaving early or other reasons, the chair shall promptly end the meeting. If you wish to comment on specific agenda items in person, please complete a speaker request form identifying the item number, your name, and deposit the completed form in the box that's located next to the clerk. To speak on a matter not appearing in the agenda but under the jurisdiction of the HNCD Commission, you may do so during public comment items. Speaker request forms must be deposited prior to the beginning of the consent calendar, the reading of the individual agenda items, the opening of the public hearing, and or the beginning of public comment item. When your name is called, please come to the podium and begin the comments by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Members of the public desiring to speak should address all remarks or questions to the commission. Speakers may address the commission up to three occasions with 3 minutes allotted to the speaker per occasion. Staff in attendance, all staff noted on the agenda are in attendance.
Okay. Next we come to the approval of the minutes. For this item, Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments?
Chair, at this time we have not received any requests to speak on item number 4, approval of minutes.
Okay, I would now entertain a motion to move agenda item number 4.
I'll move to approve if there are no changes.
Do I have a second?
Mike Frost, second.
Okay. Motion was made by Commission Member Mike Alvarez and seconded by Mike Frost. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries. Next, we come to presentations and introductions, which we have none. And we're opening up now for public comment. At this time, members of the public may address the HNCD Commission regarding any items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commission, provided that no action shall be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the Commission, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time has expired. Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments?
Chair, we have not received any requests for public comments regarding number 6 of the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Now we move to consent calendar items. We have one. It is the 2024-2025 proposed utility allowance schedule for Housing Choice Voucher Program. And January Johnson, I believe you're up.
Good morning. January Johnson, Housing Manager for the Orange County Housing Authority. This item is an annual item. HUD requires that every year the Housing Authority reviews their utility allowance schedule. And if we see that there is a 10% or more change in any of the allowances that we have on our schedule, we're required to make a change. This process is really takes a lot of our time. And it also requires a lot of knowledge about what's going on when it comes to our utilities. So we contract it out. We contract it out with the Nelrod Company.
Nelrod?
Nelrod.
Oh, Nelrod.
The Nelrod Company is well known within the Housing Authority arena, and they do it for a lot of different housing authorities across the country. So the Nelrod Company conducted our annual review, and they came back that there was a change of 10% or more in our electric allowance. So we made some adjustments to our basic electricity for bedrooms 2 through 5, our electric cooking, our electric heating for bedrooms 4 and 5, our air conditioning for all bedroom sizes, and sewer and trash costs for all bedroom sizes. You will notice that OCHA has one utility allowance schedule. We do not have an energy efficient utility allowance schedule. That's because a utility allowance schedule is for the benefit of the tenant, and so this reduces their overall cost. An energy efficient utility allowance schedule would negatively impact our tenants and ask them to pay more. Without one, OCHA picks up the difference. So we will pick up the cost of not having an energy efficient utility allowance. However, with affordable housing developments and with project-based units, there is a benefit to the landlord and an incentive to the project developer at times to be energy efficient. So OCHA has a waiver process that we adopted in 2023 that if a development that has project-based vouchers in it would like to be able to use the waiver to use an energy efficient utility allowance, they can contact the Housing Authority to do so. So the whole point here is to be able to incentivize developers for energy efficient buildings, but at the same time not penalize our Housing Choice Voucher clients by having an energy efficient utility allowance. That's it.
Okay, does anyone have any questions? So the recommended action here is just to receive and file the attached 2025 utility allowance schedule effective October 1st, 2024. Item 8 is the discussion calendar items, and there are no items on that today. Item 9 is a public hearing, and we have no public hearings. So we're going to move on to 10, which is reports of staff and or commission members, starting with community development, Craig Fee.
Good morning, Craig Fee, community development manager for Kevin Orange. Today I have a few items to go over. The first one is the 2023 Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. Every year, HUD requires us to put in an action plan at the beginning of the year stating we're going to use the HUD funds for these projects, these goals. The Consolidated Annual CAPER is the report on how we did in achieving those goals. So it's an assessment of the Durbin County's overall housing community development accomplishments in meeting the 5-year consolidated plan strategy, which I'll go over in a bit. It establishes priorities for addressing identified housing and community development needs. The county will provide the 2023-24 CAPER assessment to HUD on September 28th. The next one is the funding allocation policy and process, otherwise known as the FAP. The 25-26 Funding Allocation Policy and Process is a planning document that marks the 5th year of the consolidated plan process. So the county is unique in we use the FAP as a mechanism as to let the public know and you know that this is we're going to get our funding, and once we get the funding, this is what we're planning on using the funding for and how we're planning on using it. This year we have some changes to that, which I'll be going over here shortly. The plan sets the policy and procedures to address local housing and community development needs with federal and local resources in preparing the annual action plan. So it's prior to the annual action plan. The FAP, with proposed changes available for public review and comment through October 31st, and is up on our website now. And if you'd like the website, I can give it to you now. It's www.ochcd.org/community-development. Below is a summary of the proposed changes to the background. In order for us to receive community development block grant funding, there are many regulations that we have to abide by in order to continue to receive those funds. One of those regulations is called a timeliness report. The timeliness report is a test that HUD does every, runs a report on us every May 1st and compares how much money we've spent versus how much money we have spent. It basically compares to every year we get approximately these days $3.4 million in community development block grant funding. And HUD says by May 1st, if you have more than 150% of that, of those funds unspent, because we do have unallocated funds that we didn't use the prior year, you didn't reach that goal. That goal can mean many things. One of them is, in 2022-23, we did not reach that goal. So HUD said, shame on you. Don't do it again.
Mr. Fee, a real quick question. I'm embarrassed. I have no idea where we are on the agenda.
Yeah, just one second. Oh. When you start, would you announce who you are?
Oh, you're right.
Recording? Thank you.
Sorry, Chair Huff. Director Frost, do we have something on the agenda to follow along?
You do. For the Housing Community Development Report.
Sorry
so
about
it's the,
that.
The HCD status report.
I've been trying to find it. I
That's
apologize,
okay.
guys.
So what page it would be is it on? The last part of your packet. It's called the Housing Community Development Division status report.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And so Craig is going over his items.
I didn't say anything until I saw all my colleagues doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah, no. I gave up at that point.
We should tell you where we're updating. So
the page.
It's in the back somewhere.
So it's the final report?
Is that
From the 12th page? 12 page.
12 page. Got it.
I will make a note next time. I'll say it's on page.
Well, sorry about that. Okay. So it's on this one that we can see.
Yeah, see, I was looking for your name.
I was too.
That's we're looking for his name. Every time we look for the name of the person reporting, and it's not.
It doesn't have
Julia's
a name.
Name.
Yeah. Oh. Julius at the top.
Yeah.
Smart back.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm willing to take one.
Thank
for the
you,
team.
Mike.
No, that's great. We can do better on that. We'll let you know what we're reporting.
Life
on.
Will go on.
Yeah.
We're all right.
So,
okay.
it's a three-step process. The first time you don't reach the funding, HUD says, shame on you, don't do it again, etc. The second time, the second consecutive year if you don't reach it, HUD will come out to you and devise a plan for you to help you reach the goal the following year. Well, we said we didn't reach it once, which is the first time in my
never.
Career here that we've never, that we have not reached it. So we propose changes to the policy to hopefully alleviate not reaching that goal again, and we'll go over those as a summary here shortly. In 2023-24, we did make it the goal, but barely. It was an effort. We had a county project that we pushed way up to the front, and had many people involved to reach that goal, and we barely reached it. It was 1.48. This was 1.5, so we did good. So the recommended a summary of the recommended changes to the funding allocation policy and projects. We're now going to require that 80% of drawn existing awarded funds over the last 3 years by each subrecipient by the time a request for an application received, usually in October, this year it's going to be in on November 6th, because we had some publishing issues.
This is Julia Bidwell, Director of OC Housing Community Development. Will you remind them who the cities are? You're saying subrecipient, but these are cities applying for community development block grant funds. Who are the cities in the Urban County?
All the cities in the Urban County are cities that are 50,000 in population or less that would normally, that could receive funding, but since they're so small, they wouldn't get enough funding as with that type of population to do anything with. They'd have to wait 3-4 years to get enough money to do a project, and HUD has a mandate that you have to spend your funds in 6 years, so it wouldn't be fair. So basically what we do is we pool all the funds in the urban county that are participating cities and unincorporated areas, which the county is in charge of, put them in a pool, and the cities can apply for different types of funding. The public services, we basically allocate those directly to our public. It's a non-competitive process where we do it to shelters and community centers. Housing rehabilitation, they can apply for, that's on a 3-year process, and public facilities and improvements is on a 1-year process, and that's the bigger chunk of the money. So this year we're focusing on those because the housing rehab is on the 3rd year of their cycle, so they can automatically apply. So stating that we're going to require them to have 80% of their funds drawn in the last 3 years, we basically said, okay, we took the last 3 years, not including this year, of all of the participating cities, and added them all up and said, what percentage are you at? We had 13% to 100%. 6 of them at that time were below the 80%. Some of them have since spent more funding, so a couple of them will get out of that less than 80%. We consider them, and HUD considers them slow spenders. So the recommended changes that we're recommending will help the sub-recipient cities get caught up. So
Craig, this is Julie Bidwell, Director of OC Housing Community Development. Just for the benefit of the commission, the cities that participate in the urban county are Brea, Cypress, Dana Point, Laguna Beach, Laguna Hills, Laguna Woods, La Palma, Los Alamitos, San Juan Capistrano, Seal Beach, Stanton, and Villa Park. And then there are 2 metropolitan cities over 50,000 in population that choose their CDBG to be administered by the urban county, because you can opt into the urban county if you're larger than 50,000. And that is Yorba Linda and Placentia. So those are the cities. It's a non-contiguous, right, a group of cities, so it doesn't apply to the whole of Orange County, but just for your benefit, that's who these cities are that we're looking at their spending when they apply for the money and these requirements. So I'll hand it back over to Craig.
Thank you, Julia. So the 80% rule is basically, we're going to, by the time the RFA for the PF&I, yes?
I just have a question. So you're going to Stephanie Otto asking a question. Yorba Linda and Placentia, when they opt in to this process, they're opting out of doing it themselves, I'm guessing.
That's right.
Okay. And when you listed those cities, those are the ones that are available to apply. Those aren't the ones that did not participate. Those are the ones that...
That's the entire
they're eligible.
County, right?
Yeah.
They're the member cities.
Okay. Do we know the ones, I mean, have we targeted and we know who... it's boggling to me why you wouldn't apply for money. I'm not getting it.
Yeah, so everybody's available to apply. Not every city applies every year, but they don't have an eligible low-income public facility and improvement project that's in the works, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be in a census tract, right, in your city, doing, in this case, a public facility and improvement. Mm-hmm. That's what this RFA is about. Mm-hmm. There are cities that run housing rehab programs as well, but that's a 3-year cycle. So not everybody has a project every year that they're applying for this particular pot of money. And so there are some cities that haven't applied for several years. And there are some cities that have applied every year and we're looking at them carrying, they're not spending down to this 80% mark. Mm-hmm. And so we're just saying for the next cycle, if you haven't met, if you've got 3 years of funding on hand and it's above 80%, you haven't spent that, you won't be eligible to apply for this particular cycle. Finish the projects you have money for.
Oh, yes.
And so that's what we're saying is that we're building in a threshold that you should have drawn down 80% of your prior funds received. Mm-hmm. And so we're building in a new application threshold.
I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Mm-hmm. So, one of the next recommendations to help us spend the money is to accept one primary application and one waitlisted application or expanded scope of work on their primary application for PFNI projects. Basically, what that does is if we do recapture funding from the non-performers, we have an immediate place to give that money to a sub-recipient so they can spend it that way. That's a new one. We also allowed an increase of up to $200,000 within the year for housing rehab to some facilities apply for $150,000, $160,000, $180,000. Very rarely do they apply for $200,000, but if they, some of them spend their housing rehab money ahead of time. So we have, if we do have funding available, we'll offer housing rehab funding to them up to $200,000 so they can continue with a few more projects during the year. We also are going to increase the public facilities improvements maximums that they can apply for. Previously, it was $150,000 for a PFNI project with no match from the city. We've increased that to $250,000. Previously, before, it was $350,000 with a 20% match from the city / subrecipient. We're raising that to $450,000 with a match. So basically, they can do bigger projects or more of a project. Mm-hmm. So we figured they'll spend down more money faster. We also have allowed cities to apply for extensions, and that's part of the situation that we're in. Some cities have gotten so used to applying for extensions, so they can take a one-year contract, say, hey, I'm not done or haven't started my project yet, I would like 6 more months to complete it. And they get in that cycle. So every year, they're applying for an extension. So they're basically just behind. So we've said, in order for you to apply for an extension, it has to be extenuating circumstances beyond your control, whether or not, at the county's discretion. So it's going to be more stringent. Before, we just give it to them and say, oh, hey, go ahead. But now we have a reason to say, we can't really do that anymore because you're a constant slow spender. And that's limited to one extension per contract. In certain states before, instances before, we actually have, we can extend it up for a year, which really gets us behind, because then we're a year behind. Mm-hmm. Next requirement puts a little more bite into it. We put a step-by-step process. We're gonna require the design of the PFNI projects to be, I'm a little bit off the thing, but I'm doing it sequential. We're going to require the design of the project to be completed by September 30th and the bid package to be completed by November 15th. This basically tells the city, if you're going to do this PFNI project, you need to start right away because it's a longer process. And a lot of them waited because they applied for extension the year before. Well, I'm not going to start my project until January of this year. So they're 6 months behind where they need to start. This tells them, get going, get started. If you don't get started, you're gonna take your money. So, taking your money. On January 15th, we're gonna require 50% of the project to be obligated or spent, or the recapture of funds will be initiated. That gives us time to distribute that money to the performers that who can spend the money. Not meeting the design and bid package commitment is the same thing. If they don't meet those milestones, they won't be able to apply for another PFNI project for 1 year. So if they don't meet the 50%, we're going to take it. But if they don't reach the first two, we say you're behind. We're going to allow you to get caught up. You can't apply this coming year. Questions? Yes.
Before Stephanie Otto, question is, when you all brought these recommended changes, did you inquire of the cities what would work to best facilitate the spending of the money?
We basically, we took it to the city manager's subcommittee for discussion.
Yeah.
And they agreed with some of them and actually modified some of them, the bid package and the design was suggested to them to allow the cities, okay, rather than hit them in January, rather than taking their money, hey, here's your first milestone. Shoot for that first. Mm-hmm. Don't wait until December and go, oh, we got to spend our money by January. So they said, well, give us some time to get things going so we know that if we don't reach it by January, we actually tried or knew what we were getting into.
Great. So you got their feedback. That's great.
Yes.
And then what is the match for the with the 450?
20%.
20%. Okay.
That has not changed.
Great. Cecilia Hupp here. The subcommittee of city managers, does that consist of city managers from the cities that apply for the CDBG?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you.
And they reviewed that on September 4th.
And then just a follow-up question so that I understand this better. What types of projects have we funded in the past for this?
Public facilities, basically senior centers, community centers, street improvements, ADA improvements.
Okay, so it would be like what I would do. I understand it's not just housing. No,
that's
just
right.
In that neighborhood. So it's just like when I do my own CDBG.
That's right.
Okay, I understand. Okay.
Anyone else?
Oh. Chair Huff, Mike Frost, Dana Point. Are the funds for this used oftentimes for sort of what I would consider the pre-development design? Is that why it's ultimately not getting spent?
Design is an eligible part of a project, and they can apply and invoice that, and we will spend it.
Yes, but we are allocating basically the full project amount, and they're only spending the design, and hence that's why they're falling behind sometimes?
Typically, they don't start the project, in my experience. Yeah.
They don't even start the design?
Right. This is where Julia Bidwell, director of OCHCD, this was a great discussion with the participating city manager subcommittee. In fact, we had come in and Craig and his group thought, you know, bid package. We, instead of checking in with you only in January to find out that you didn't even start the project, we thought, well, let's check in on your bid package. And it was actually Laguna Woods city manager, Chris Macon, that mentioned, actually, it'd be great for me with my staff and my engineers if we could check in at design. If we can check in up there, then I have something to tell my staff, hey, listen, we're falling behind here. And so it was a really good discussion because, like as Craig mentioned, I know you're mentioning that they were actually starting a project and spending any of the money that they have because they have match, right? They've got this money, or just a portion of these public facility improvements. It seemed like they weren't starting the projects. And it's a July 1 start. And so we'd show up at 6 months later and they hadn't done it. We have monitoring. So the other way that Craig let the cities know is that in their annual monitoring, if they're a slow spender this year, he showed them their percentage drawdown, right? Their projects alluded to, we're making recommendations, right, to go into this plan about being able to apply for funds, spending funding quicker. And so he's had a conversation with each of the staff at each of those cities, as well as sending out the FAP, we call it the FAP, funding allocation policy process, to all of the cities, right, to their city managers and copying our community development staff. So, and we think it's pretty widely known. To your point, Mike, we're seeing people not starting the project.
Not starting the vertical or the actual construction, or not starting the design?
Not starting the design, not starting. And so I know we're in the same boat. We understand there's changes in staffing. HUD, actually, community development was ahead of the game. HUD sent out a notice about a week before we put out our FAP, restating the timeliness goal and saying we understand during COVID there was waivers of the timeliness goal. So there were waivers in place during COVID, and now they're telling us there are no more waivers, right? This, you need to start doing this. So we understand some of the staffing considerations at the smaller cities. We hope to provide technical assistance when we come out for monitoring. And so this isn't to be punitive. We try to balance it with incentives. You can come get more money if you're performing. Yeah.
That was, yeah, the only, I love these bullets. They make sense to me. The only thing I would potentially add would be that, you know, the design and the sort of entitlement feasibility is a lot of unknowns there. Would you ever break up the actual construction budget?
Oh, yeah.
Funding between, you know, pre-development and once you figure out your exact project, come back for more?
Yes.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, never mind. Okay.
In each project, they can do what's called a budget. This is design, preparation, construction.
And they can make, correct, Julia Bidwell, they can make the scope, just the design, then when they apply in 2025 and then come back and apply for the scope for the latter half of the project.
Good. Okay. I almost think you'd always want them to be separate, but.
Julia, Cecilia Hupp here. Is there a potential for a report card that you could give the councils and the participating cities so that we know what we need to stay on top of with our city managers?
Yes.
Yeah, we Julia Bidwell.
Sorry.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. We should get a dashboard, work with the city managers. I'll probably work with the city managers before we give it to their councils. But yeah, we can work on a dashboard.
Okay, it would be informational for us, and it would be something that if we see our cities are falling behind, we can put the pressure on to make it happen.
Carla Wilkerson, I'm just curious. So it was multiple cities and most of the cities that missed the mark on the timeliness goal?
Less than half.
Okay. It's just a lot of recommendations, which is great, because it looks like you are putting a lot of good systems in place.
Stephanie Otto. How is a way we can get to the elected leadership on this? I understand working with city managers, and I think that's really important. But ultimately, based on, if the council doesn't know that they're missing out on funding opportunities, I mean, they should jump on it. They're the ones accountable to the voters. And so how can we make sure that the council and the electeds know that this is happening? Because I'm not so sure they do.
Thank you, Julia Bidwell, Director of OC Housing Community Development. We as county staff work through our Board of Supervisors, so we could work through our Board of Supervisors on what that might look like. I think there's a big opportunity. Craig is going to brief you on the start of the five-year consolidated plan. This sets the five-year goals. Mm-hmm. We really want to engage the communities to get their citizens to participate. Mm-hmm. And what are the wants and needs of those jurisdictions? I think we have an opportunity to engage at the con plan time. Mm-hmm. And then also engage on I like the dashboard idea that allows us to kind of synthesize that, but we can work through our Board of Supervisors and see.
I think that'd be good.
What the engagement is.
I think some type of written communication to each supervisor that's in these areas to let them know so that they can talk to other electeds about this, because I think that would be an effective way to try to get it done.
If you add one more thing, we do monitor all of our cities' drawdown spending every month. We have a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And we add to it every month so we know exactly where they're at. And sending emails didn't work, talking to them didn't work, so we're putting it into the policy.
Yeah.
And Chair sorry, Wayne, go ahead.
Wayne Crowell, I have a quick question about the spreadsheet you're talking about that you might work with the cities on. I'm just curious as far as the, I don't want to call it a threat, but these thresholds or deadlines that are establishing of the cities not receiving the funds. What's the process? Is once they're awarded, it's just the county saying you've been awarded X number, but you're still holding the funds until they request it.
Correct.
So it's not as if you're giving it to them first. Okay.
CDBG is a revert, is a re, re,
reimbursement.
That word. It's a reimbursement for HUD. So when they spend the money, they invoice us and we reimburse them for the spent money.
Chair Huff. Mike Frost, I just wanted to echo Stephanie's comment to the extent you can kind of hear the tone, Julia. I think it'd be fine with you if you highlighted any cities sort of holding on to a bunch of funds and they're restricted and it's holding back other cities. If there are some, I would agree. I think we should highlight that nicely. But if that's holding back other cities from accomplishing goals, our supervisors should know that. And that should be highlighted to the extent you can.
Right. Thank you, Mike. And I'm Julia Bidwell, Director of Housing and Community Development. This city's, their staff, I don't think there's any one of them that is just really not trying. So I think this is our first shot at, you know, being able to get this up and running. So I do want to give people a chance. There's also people that immediately started to invoice and now have met the 80%. So it's starting to work already. So I want to see a little bit, you know, how this comes about, you know, because, and I appreciate you saying to this, to the extent that we can, and but I'd like to give them a chance.
Yeah.
As well.
Questions?
All right. Back to you on five-year comp plan, maybe.
Next up, five-year consolidated plan. The five-year consolidated plan, known as the comp plan, is a planning document that we use HUD funds for CDBG, Home Investment Partnership, Investment Partnership Act plan, and Emergency Solution Grant programs. The 25-29 comp plan is currently being updated. We've just started. And is due to HUD on May 15th. The updated plan will identify the current housing and community development needs to the Urban County and sets forth the strategic plan for addressing these identified needs and also satisfies the minimum statutory requirements for CDBG, Home, and ESG. That's why we go out to the communities themselves and say, what's important to you in your area? What's needed? So we're actually having, we have five meetings in the community and two meetings with service providers. They're out there, they're in the field, what have you found? And that sets our priorities for 5 years. And the high priorities are the ones that we fund. The annual action plan can update those if something happens, COVID. We update the annual action plan and then we can spend COVID funds. So, but it gets what's important to them now or what's needed in their communities now. And I have them spread out throughout the whole county to hit all the districts.
Craig, this is Julia Bidwell. If I may, we're going to be coming back to this commission with a presentation of the draft con plan. But if you are also in a participating city, you live in one, you're an elected official from one, you drive through one, we will be giving you materials to outreach, to say where the five meetings are being held. It's hard these days to get individuals to a meeting, so we're seeing what are the best methods. We've always had a survey. I think the link is online as well. We just have to make sure the input is from this non-contiguous group of cities. So it's a little bit more challenging, and it's not the whole county. So
with that. As part of the con plan, another piece of it is a permanently furthering fair housing plan. Every year, along with a consolidated plan, we have a fair housing plan that certifies, is required for communities to administer federal grants with CDBG, ESG, and home funds. And a permanently furthering fair housing plan for all the Orange counties in progress with the city of Santa Ana as the county as a whole. So the whole county is doing one plan for every city in the county. So it's a group effort. And we have a consultant on board. It's in progress right now with input from all the cities. and that's due to HUD on May 15th, along with the contract. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Craig. Now we'll move on to the housing development report, which will be presented by Michelle Zadiva.
Good morning, Michelle Zadiva, Housing Development Manager. For this...
Can you point us to where we are in the packet?
3 of 12.
Oh, we're right below, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in the same report. Page 3 of 12. So since we last met, we have had two project review advisory panel meetings where we moved forward collectively four projects. One you have seen before, it's Wise Place in Santa Ana. That project, we reviewed its feasibility. It needed additional operating subsidies for the next 15 to 20 years of the project. So we brought it back. We recommended to include capitalized operating subsidies reserves using MHSA dollars. So that's moving forward. It will go back to the Project Review Advisory Panel, PRAP, for underwriting review. We also brought forward El Trudy 2 Senior in Yorba Linda. It's technically a phase two of a CNC project. And that one will be moving forward through underwriting as well. That would return to PRAP for continuance. That's two projects. And then for a future project review advisory panel meeting, we will have it on October 17th. That is where we will bring forward three projects that we are reviewing right now. A 189-unit project in Placentia, a 38-unit project in Brea, and a 70-unit project in Costa Mesa. And then I wanted to also provide an update on our notice of funding availability. So if you go to page 10 of 12, our 2023 Supportive Housing Notice of Funding Availability First Amendment. For the amendment, we have received six applications requesting $12.6 million in capital funding and 113 project-based vouchers. This includes the three projects that I mentioned that will be going to PRAP for threshold review next month. In anticipation of the Home Key Plus NOFA that is being released by the state in November, we have suspended our NOFA to ensure that there are available resources in case the county has a Home Key Plus project that we want to bring forward and apply for funding for. excuse me. And just to share some updates on Home Key Plus, we did hold a roundtable meeting, a Home Key Plus roundtable meeting facilitated by Corporation for Supportive Housing on Monday, September 23rd. It was a great turnout. We had about 55 attendees. We sent the invitation out to cities, developers, service providers, so we had a mixed bag of folks to come attend, and we provided great feedback. Information right now is still a little bit limited. State HD has released an overview indicating, you know, there's a lot of references to round three, which I'm not sure if commissioners, if you all recall, but we did apply for round three and did receive an award. So based on that knowledge, we have some anticipations going into Home Key Plus about what kind of projects will be eligible. There are some additional information. So we know that this NOFA includes about $2 billion in funding. They are not entertaining any more interim housing projects, which is different from previous rounds. They are allowing new construction. There is a total development cost cap, but they don't say what that is. But the new construction projects, staying true to all the time frames, it starts when you get the award. New construction projects need to start construction within 6 months of award and be complete within 24 months of award. So I think the time frame seems a little bit more feasible, but it is a little bit difficult for projects to be able to do that. That was some of what was shared with us at the roundtable as well. The populations to be served for previous Home Key was general homeless population, 30% AMI. The 30% AMI still stays true, but now the units must serve individuals with a behavioral health challenge, which includes a serious mental health illness or substance use disorder. So that is a change from prior rounds, and we're working with the healthcare agency right now to see what that looks like in terms of services that should be provided and what that commitment looks like. In terms of timeline, we do anticipate that the NOFA will be released in November with applications due by May. They're anticipating to open up the portal in January and then having the applications due 4 months from then. So we're anticipating May timeframe for the application due and then awards to start being announced as applications are being received on a rolling basis as with the prior home key rounds. The county staff, we are working on a request for information, just like prior home key rounds, to be able to solicit developers and projects that could be eligible for Home Key Plus. So that would be, we hope to have that released in October. We are also working on a re-syndication policy as well to address older properties that are aging and are looking to re-syndicate, which is getting new tax credits, recapitalizing, refinancing, and if any of the things that they need to be doing after the initial 15-year tax credit compliance period. Once we have that policy in place, that will come back around to PRAP and to Housing Community Development Commission as well for consideration. As well as our change to policy and process for our notice of funding availability. Every year we do bring the recommended changes to the commission for consideration as well, and we anticipate that we will do the same for this year in anticipation of releasing NOFA next year. And then I am going to go back to page 6, where we have grand openings and groundbreakings. So hopefully you have all received the invite for the Crossroads grand opening, which is today at 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you all there. This is a really great project, extremely, extremely collaborative. I don't know, Julia, is this in the heart of yours? Okay. So this is a property that is owned by the county and the city with a tenants in common ownership structure. So we had to merge the properties there was a joint powers agreement. It was very complex, but we basically got together, made it into one property, and then a ground lease it to the developer so they can build this site. There was also some contamination issues. It's very complex, and so we were able to work with the state on getting it cleaned up, and so it's a very collaborative and innovative project. Worked with Related on this, so hoping that you'll all be able to make it out there to celebrate with us today. But I think that'll be the end of my report, unless there's any questions.
Any questions? No? Okay. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Next, we have the Orange County Housing Authority update presented by January Johnson, our housing manager.
Hello again, everybody. Jane Ray Johnson, Housing Manager for Orange County Housing Authority. I'm going to give you guys an update on the Housing Opportunities for Modernization Act of 2016, otherwise known as HOTMA. I've been giving you guys an update on this pretty much every meeting for almost over a year, promising to bring you a change to our administrative plan. And every single time we speak, there's conversation about an extension or a delay. Once again, there is another delay, and so I had anticipated having an administrative plan to bring to you guys with pretty much an overhaul of our processes. However, there were some steps that HUD needs to go through in order for us to start that process, and so they've effectively put it on hold with no information as to when we can expect it to proceed. It should be in 2025, which means we will probably be bringing you an overhaul to that administrative plan at the end of 2025. Because they've changed this, they've made some other major changes to a couple of our other programs which require an administrative plan change. So we will be bringing that to you in June, and then you'll see it again, another administrative plan change again in 2025. So we'll get to see two changes next year.
January, if I may, Julie Bidwell, Director. So OCHA has a status report in your packet, but what Jenner is updating you on is something that she thought she was going to bring you. It's not in the report.
Got it.
Because there's a delay from HUD, so she's telling you why it is not in there.
And a lot of the updates that I bring you are not in there. That report is the status of each of the programs and where we are at PSUP and where our clients are. A lot of the updates I bring you are a little more administrative in nature, and so they are not captured necessarily in that report. So, exactly what Julie said. You might not want to go looking for it because you won't find it. But I do want to share the two exciting changes to a couple of our programs. We really, and this might be something that when you go out into the community, you'll be hearing about. One that we're very excited about is some fundamental changes to the HUD-VASH program. One of them is HUD required previously that all of our programs had a maximum of 50% area median income as a population we can serve. For some sort of reference for you guys, for a household of one, that's about $55,000 a year. They found out that for our veteran population, because of their pension and their disability benefits, this precluded them from getting the assistance that they would otherwise be eligible for because they earned more than 50% of area median income. So we were seeing a lot of our veteran population not being served. So HUD changed the regulation and allows us to serve up to 80% AMI for our veteran population, which is a significant change. 80% AMI is about $88,400 for a household of one. And so in Orange County, that makes a big difference for us. So we're starting to see, this was made effective on August 13th of this year. So we're starting to see some increase in the number of veterans that are able to be referred to us. In addition, some of our veterans are still not eligible to the program at the 80% AMI because they receive temporary disability benefits or disability benefits for a period of time that puts them over that 80%. So HUD has mandated that if an otherwise eligible veteran has more than an 80% AMI due to their disability benefits, for eligibility purposes only, we must exclude that income. And so what you're doing is you're allowing otherwise eligible veterans to be able to receive the assistance that they need, but their portion of rent and their contribution to the program will count that disability income, but we wouldn't exclude them from a program that they're otherwise eligible for. So for us, this is a significant change and very exciting because it really does help expand the number of veterans that we're able to support.
Quick question. Thanks, Chair Huff. Mike Frost, Dana Point. Would the drawback on that be the fact that we need more vouchers anyway, that we're actually reducing, granted we're helping veterans, but we're also reducing a little bit the other folks who may not be veterans?
Now this
it's
is
not like this is a pure extra, is it?
It is. So one of the good things about your packet is you will see the number of VASH vouchers that we have available and how many we're serving. So the HUD VASH program is a separate program from the Housing Choice Voucher program, and so this will allow us to utilize more of those vouchers. We right now have 1,039 HUD VASH vouchers, and we're serving about 76% of those vouchers. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we can't serve veterans who would otherwise be eligible because they receive this disability income. So this opens up that door so that we can help serve those additional veterans and utilize all the vouchers we have.
And we don't have any veterans on our standard HUD vouchers, right? We've obviously identified all those and moved them over so then we can put other...
We do, because this program requires case management. And so the veterans that are on our Housing Choice Voucher waiting list may not require case management. So the HUD voucher program does require a case management component. So it is a little bit different, and the staffing and components of the program are slightly different than our regular.
Okay, so we'd want to raise the requirements to a level where we're using 100% of them, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's what we're trying, got it.
Yep, so this is exciting and great news for us, great news for the veteran community, and something that people have been working on for a long time. That change, you're gonna see an administrative plan update in June because we're obligated to put that in there. The other program that is impacted is our mainstream voucher program. The mainstream voucher program serves individuals 18 to 61 with a disability who are homeless and either exiting recuperative care or have been frequent users of the Orange County Emergency Services. previously, we were serving individuals who were in OCHA's jurisdiction. So that meant all the cities and unincorporated areas except for Santa Ana, Garden Grove, and Anaheim, because those three cities have their own housing authorities. HUD has determined that individuals who meet this criteria tend to be transitionary. They may cross borders. They may not necessarily just be from one housing authority's jurisdiction. So they remove the residency preference. So no housing authority can refuse to serve somebody who meets this criteria based on where they live, or maybe where they were exiting the recuperative care, which is really what the key component is. It's because recuperative care is not necessarily in all cities, right? So this way they're making sure that somebody doesn't fall into that kind of a black hole of non-assistance. So this is very exciting as well, that we've really opened up the doors. This has worked very well with our HUD-VASH program. There are no residency requirements for HUD-VASH, and there are no residency requirements for the emergency housing voucher program. And what we're found is if you don't have residency requirements for these special purpose vouchers, it really does open up the opportunity to serve as many people in your community. Even though it seems counterintuitive that if you're saying I'm not serving those in my community, that how am I actually serving more? It's because you have many housing authorities within one jurisdictional area, right? So we have four housing authorities here in Orange County. This is opens it up so that one person can serve by any one of those four housing authorities. That's usually how it works best. So these are exciting things. You're gonna see those changes in that administrative plan to you by fortune next year. Those are my updates.
Stephanie. Stephanie Otto, so how many VASH vouchers do we have and how many are we using?
We have 1,039, so we're using about 76%. That includes both project-based and tenant-based.
Okay, thank you. That's the 821 number, is the 76%?
Okay. That's a moving target. So.
Right, right. Thank you.
James Lai, question is, I think you answered it, but when does the AMI adjustment for VASH kick in?
It was effective on August 13th, 2024. So just a month.
Just now. Okay, great.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, January. Moving right along, we have a report from our Executive Director, Julia Bidwell.
Hi, good morning. Julia Bidwell, Executive Director. Good morning. Julia Bidwell, Executive Director, Orange County Housing Authority. Short report, you got a lot of information from our managers today. I just have a reminder and then a promise presentation, PowerPoint from the Apartment Association. We couldn't show it at our last meeting. It went long, so I'm bringing it back today. It's fun. I'll do that at the end of my report. So my reminder this morning, there's a revised policy on AB 1234 ethics training. County ethics training policy has been updated to require training within 1 year of appointment and every 2 years thereafter. Previously, it was every even year thereafter. So this is a change in the policy. Individuals required to take the AB 1234 ethics training are all county elected officials and board, commission, and committee members, such as yourselves and this commission. Reminders will continue to come from Jasmine Mull. She's at the Office of Campaign Finance and Ethics Commission, and it'll come to Jessica, Commission Clerk. So be kind when Jessica is reminding you that you need to take the training, just so that you remain eligible to serve. That's my reminder. And so then, as I mentioned, we're going to show to you the Orange County Trade Show that we participated in. It's a PowerPoint. Hopefully everybody can see. I think it's at the back and here. And I'm going to have Karen run the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
What it does for us, and you can see the comments embedded in there from the landlords, right? This is landlord outreach. We're trying to get their business and understand what we can do better. And communication was our theme this year. So thank you for letting us show that to you.
Thank you, Julia.
That's awesome.
Okay, moving right along, we're now open for member comments. At this time, members of the H and CD Commission may comment on agenda or non-agenda matters and ask questions of or give directions to staff, provided that no action shall be taken on non-agenda items unless authorized by law. Do we have any member comments? Mike?
Yes, Julia, I understand, you know, they're trying to put together the meeting for the interviews through PrEP. Is there an update on that as far as a date and time yet?
Yeah, so you're talking about the ad hoc selection committees?
Yes.
For the, yes, absolutely. Jessica's sending out the information, and thank you, Mike. I should have put that in my executive director report, that we actively, the tenant, the selection committee has met and interviewed, and we're working with the at-large on dates to be able to interview. And obviously, when they have their selections, we'll bring that back to the commission.
Okay, anyone else?
Okay. This is Helen Gardner, tenant representative. I would, you all have heard me say this before, but I want to go to the next apartment.
Yes.
We should all be there because it's really fun. Even if we put like a shift, you know, when we come in, and but just being in the booth, talking to landlords, talking to other tenants, it's a really neat experience. So I encourage, be sure and let us know when it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Wayne?
Going back to Craig's report and some of the comments that came from the elected officials as far as trying to be involved or aware, is, I mean, all of those awards are public information, correct?
Julie Bidwell, Director of Housing Community Development. Yes, it's what we call our annual action plan is that 1 year it will say who got awarded all of the funds in that plan annually.
So similar to like these nice tables that we receive that in our reports that show the projects, what city these projects are in, the status report. Is there something that might be able to be put on our website that anyone could go on and go, hey, these are, this is what's been awarded to all these different cities, and this is the status. And that way, anyone could go in and say, hey, I've got a project here that's going on in my city that I might be interested in, and this is what the status is. And that way, if it's past due or they don't make these deadlines, you know, they'll be aware, hey, what's going on with that project. If there's a list that is similar to what we see in our reports, because I love it. I mean, I know, hey, I'm familiar with Huntington Beach. Okay, they got Oasis and they got this other one going off Beach and Ellis. Or, hey, there's nothing going on in Fullerton. Why not? You know, why aren't they applying for, you know, money? So I mean, it's nice to see many of the cities and the county participating, but then, you know, I don't see a project in Mission Viejo. I don't see one in San Clemente, so just wondering, you know, everyone should be asking for these monies and helping out, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, thank you, Julie Goodwill, Director of Housing Community Development. Thank you for all the input. Well, we put that down too, obviously, yes. We, Wayne, you're speaking of the tables in the Housing Community Development Report that talk about the NOFA projects, and each project is listed in there. It says where they are and in the process. Yeah, it's a good idea. We tend to focus on our annual action plan when we award it. We'll take a look at how we can, now that we have metrics, hopefully this gets adopted by the Board of Supervisors. Let me just put that out there. We still have to go with those recommendations to the FAP, to the Board of Supervisors. If they get recommended, then we actually have something to report on, right? That the project is at design. Project did their bid package, or their project is 75% drawn down. So now that we've established some of these metrics, we can put together a table like that.
Because that, you know, I'd go on the website and say, hey, if this is updated monthly, even at least you can kind of follow it if you're interested.
Thank you for all the input.
Just something to throw out there.
Thank you.
I know you guys were asking. Yeah,
anyone else?
Rather than just trying to ask the city manager what's going on, you might be able to go on and see what everybody's projects are.
Yeah, that's a good
if
point.
If it's transparent, I'm assuming it's all public information. So.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, that brings us to our next scheduled meeting, which is October 24th, 2024, right here in this building. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
See you.
How are you? You look fantastic. Good job. How's everything going?